Hello, operatives. Welcome to Season 2, Episode 8 of Once Upon a Kill Team, the podcast about narrative play in Warhammer 40k Kill Team. I'm Sean.
And I'm Jason, and we want to talk to you about building stories around the gameplay in this grim, dark, terrible universe. In this episode, we review Ashes of Faith, the two-player dedicated narrative campaign box that did come out a while ago. What do we think of the teams, the campaign system, the future of this format in Kill Team? We also welcome back friend of the show, Nick, and I think third or fourth time contributor, Sal. Welcome to the show, guys.
Thank you for having me.
Hey, guys. I don't know if it's the third time or the second time.
I think it's the third. Third for sure.
You've been on the most.
Yay! That's the crown.
Title holder. We'll start the show as usual with the hobby magic that we've been up to. Sean, do you want to kick us off?
Yeah, I'm looking up how much I've written in the notes and how long this episode is. So I'm going to be real quick. Here is my big old beefy Redemptor.
Listeners to the show, it's a very beefy, kick-ass looking dreadnought.
Let's try to describe it a little bit.
There's wires hanging off it. Oh my god.
Oh yeah.
This is, of course, you can't do something without kick-bashing it. It's the law.
So it looks like a Redemptor with one of its arms replaced by a chain blade that seems like it's come off a knight.
That's correct. A chaos knight that's been de-chaosified.
So the chain blade is as big as the Redemptor himself. And then the other side looks like it has a riptide weapon on it.
There's some riptide in there.
I was going to say ghost kill, but it's a very big ion cannon, I think.
It's a combination of the two. Yeah, this is my Deathwatch R&D Redemptor. Equipped with the BFG and his massive chainsword. Sal's got the bit right there.
Yeah, I've got a ghost kill.
Well, I would say it's completely on par for a Sean-built thing to be massively over the top, but awesome at the same time. So fantastic. That looks amazing.
Thank you. I didn't know if Sal would be a bit sad with the shackled shield drone.
Yeah,
attached to the shop. Atop, and it's like his one-time use invulnerable save. So,
is it detachable?
No, that is super glued in, and there's wire holding it up to make it look like it's floating.
If it was detachable, then that would be cool, because then your one-time invulnerable save used up, gone.
next time. Now, Jason, what have you been up to? Because I think you've just had a happy little parcel in the post.
I have. I've done the last of my Blitz Bowl teams, the Imperial Nobles, so that project's now finished. I've got a 12-team league that I'm soloing at the moment, so that's fun. So the latest ones are in Candy Pink and Blue and White. So am I influenced by Barbie? Maybe subliminally. I have also made some good progress on the Chaos Cult team after promising that I would do in the last episode. But the real kind of hit here, this is for the dads out there. My teenage daughters, out of absolutely nowhere, just asked, "Can I paint some of your minis?" And of course, the answer is yes. So teenage daughters have had a go, and I've got to say they've set the stall for the colour scheme. I already had some colours on the table, so they've given pink, magenta, and blue as some of the colours on these Chaos Cult. So definitely Slaanesh, I'm thinking. I've unlocked a level, a Hammer Dad's Dream.
Brilliant.
Yeah. So I'll be getting cracking on the rest of that. That's pretty good. And then, very excitedly, the models for the Void Boys troop, my Harlequin proxy team with Orc Storm Boys. Massive rocket packs, a weird boy for the Shadow Seer. I've got an orc looter with a massive gun as the Death Jester. I can't tell you how excited I am for this lot. And yeah, they fly. Can't wait. And we all know how much I love a jetpack. So this is practically all of my dreams come true.
And now, the models you've got for them are kind of suitably skinny as well, aren't they? They haven't got the normal orky bulk to them.
Oh, possibly the opposite. I think they're possibly not quite scale. They seem to be slightly too big, but they're orcs, so that's fine. So
I don't know if this is true, but I read somewhere a long time ago that orc storm boys are like the anti-orc because they're extremely disciplined and regimented.
Yep. That's right. Rules.
So they're like the crazies by orc standards.
Yeah.
I thought that was the commandos because they actually use tactics, which makes them a bit of an anomaly compared to other orcs.
Turns out there's quite a lot of abnormal orcs out there. Anyway, very
what even is normal.
We celebrate abnormal here. Anyway, that's all me. Sal, you will have been doing something amazing. What have you got?
Just posted a picture in the Discord to share, but I have managed to finish my white consoles for Justine's squad, which hasn't been the rules for which has not been released yet. Neither have the models, now that I think of it. but yeah, I decided to proxy the models because it's a 7-model kill team. Obviously, I think you're only going to be able to field 6 of them. So
yeah,
I picked the leader option, and the reason I started this was because I saw the model for. I mean, I was very interested in the Justine squad anyway, because you have a heavy intercessor and an eliminator, and I was like, oh, gotta get that mixed squad. Also I saw that the Captain Messinius model, Games Workshop sells, is a perfect stand-in for the captain.
Plasma pistol and power fist included.
Yeah, I mean, not that that's a very hard to find combo when you're assembling any Space Marine, but I mean, it looks cool. It's got like a little cape, and it's got like ornamentation and all these, you know, honor laurel wreaths and all that, what have you. And started reading up on some of the lore behind the white consoles, and it's pretty interesting. Like, they're Space Marine governors, essentially.
They're like the diplomats specifically, aren't they?
No, not specifically diplomats. It's like they have 2 chapter masters, one of whom is always like doing combat stuff, and one of whom's just like sitting on their home planet governing it, like doing bureaucracy and stuff, passing laws and things like that.
That's really cool.
It makes sense. They're Ultramarine successors, right? So
they are. Yeah,
that is their jam.
Tidying up the universe.
They are super religious, though. They consider the Emperor a god, and Gilliman is a demigod, and they think that the Codex Astartes is like, you know, a holy book and things like that. So, but you know, they seem interesting. I haven't actually read any of the Dawn of War books, so this is all just me going off, you know, wiki articles and things like that.
I can tell our listeners the models look absolutely dope. You've done an amazing job on these. They look really, really cool. So
thank you. I'm really proud.
Yeah, check it out. Nick, you will have almost finished a project.
No, that would be an overstatement. I've made some progress on a project. So in the time that you've probably painted like 2 or 3 teams, I've nearly finished a test model for my commandos. Because part of the challenge was I did all the skin with the airbrush, and then I and loads of volumetric highlights. But then when I'm doing all my layering, I've had to basically mix a bunch of paints together to figure out what it's going to look like. But that's all done now, and I think I've more or less got the scheme figured out. Now I have the fun part of painting camo onto all of their fatigues. After I do a couple of test runs on a Space Marine scout cloak.
Nick, you realize this, the commandos are gonna get nerfed, and then you're gonna stop playing though.
Oh, I'm playing narrative. Like, they'll still be strong though.
Yeah, but if you lose an operative, that's gonna still affect them.
They'll still be good.
I remember this is kind of how it was with Warp Coven, and then Hunter Clay.
We never did see those Bloodthirsters.
Warp Coven, I got burnt out on competitively. They're still good in narrative, and I still do use them there, but they're just terrible for competitive.
So just to update the listener here, so Nick has got, I think you've played the most teams of anyone I've met in Kill Team. Although we did have Can You Roll a Crit on last week, and he's probably played most of them as well. But apart from the almost pro players, I think you've played the most teams. However, you've turned up to a game with me once with a fully painted team.
Yeah, that's probably true.
Nick likes to troll me every week with the project that he's working on, and I go, "That looks really cool. You should finish that." And that's the last picture I ever see.
He just loves hearing it.
Yeah.
So,
on that vein, I also built a Pathfinder team in the last week or so. Uh-huh. So I want to learn how they play. So,
okay, 3 out of 10. See me.
You've gone for a handsome green on the Pathfinders.
Yeah, I actually know how I'm going to do that because that's basically my Raptor scheme. So that there's no faffing around trying to recreate it. I know that's already. I've already got that written down, so I know all the steps.
It sounds like a promise. Awfully close to a promise. Okay, well let's draw a line and go on to the fun bit, playing games. Now, we'll do this the other way around. Sal, what have you got on the game front recently? Oh,
So I've had two significant sort of things to talk about on that front. Some of which we've probably talk about later. First of all, Nick and I have been playing the Ashes of Faith narrative campaign, which is what we're going to be talking about in this episode anyway. So the box released with Inquisition and Chaos Cults, but those aren't the teams that we were playing, mostly because I don't have Inquisition. So I think Nick and I, we integrated it into our current narrative campaign, just sort of like, created a smaller narrative within one part of the world, within one city, and said, hey, there's this hive city over here. Some orcs are trying to destabilize it, and some Kassarkin commandos are trying to defend it. So that's kind of what we've been doing. There's a lot to talk about that, though, so we can discuss that later. But Nick, did you want to add anything to that?
Not really. I mean, the gist of it was we wanted to play Ashes of Faith. I did actually get the teams, but we'll talk about more about the teams later, but I don't particularly actually want to play Chaos Cults or Inquisition, and it seemed like a good excuse to get the commandos. So.
Too right.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Aside from that, Nick and I also had another game, which was significant, and this one was a 3-player game with Guy Barton from our narrative campaign. This was the finale to our previous campaign, which I think you guys have mentioned on the podcast once or twice. Killzone Carrion, which, to be fair, the story for which Sean was the one who came up with. We played the special 3-player mission that they recently released in White Dwarf. I think it's called, Capture the Prisoner or something. Mm-hmm. It features like a White Dwarf only kill team called Cult of the Unshackled. This was a lot of fun. So the objective for this one was that the big bad evil guy of our narrative campaign, an ex-inquisitor by the name of Saren, was trying to awaken an army of men of iron under his thrall. And something along those lines, or maybe there was a Catan weapon. I don't actually remember myself. It's been a while.
it was the Men of Iron. I think they had the key to like an STC or something. From memory.
Yeah, he had a control rod or something which allowed him to control Men of Iron. And so I was playing the Cult of the Unshackled, which is a extremely simple kill team where you have one extremely powerful psyker as your leader and then 13 thugs, basically.
Fantastic.
Cultists. And the very fun thing about this mission is that it doesn't end on round 4. It continues until one of the other two players captures the leader of the Cult of the Unshackled. So the super powerful psyker. And another thing that's
fun
about
game cafe closes.
Or the board game cafe closes. And the other super fun thing about Cult of the Unshackled is that you have a strategic ploy which lets you revive your operatives. So you kind of never run out of operatives. You just keep throwing these disposable thugs out at the other two teams, and they have to come to you to try and kill your leader and end the game.
Sounds cool.
It's kind of like the wave mode.
It kind of is.
Well, Guy got a Pyrrhic victory in true 40k fashion.
What teams were you guys playing?
I was playing as Crew, and he was playing as Corsairs. But in true 40k fashion, we both got tabled, but the Inquisitor died, so the eternal stalemate continued.
Yeah, it's very thematic, because I think Nick's team managed to kill the Inquisitor, earning victory points, and then...
No, I think it was Guy killed the Inquisitor, but he also killed my leader, which meant he got basically two
Six
victory points.
Points.
And then I killed his leader in return and got half his victory points. And the decider was basically, could you get the Inquisitor's corpse off the board? And I had a Croot Hound snatch up the body and make a run for it. But unfortunately, all my operatives basically died, like, 2 or 3 inches from the edge I needed to get off. But I dragged it so far from the opposite side of the board that basically Guy ended up dying trying to get it back to his half, because Sal respawned a whole bunch of guys.
Sounds great.
That sounds really good fun.
It was a great game. I would encourage anybody to try out that mission, because it is a lot of fun. It's it's a very thematic mission.
Yeah, and just to say, I'm kind of halfway through book 3 of the Eisenhorn trilogy at the moment, which is, this just feels so like that.
Pretty much, yeah.
For anyone out there, I highly recommend the Eisenhorn trilogy. Very thematic. I've got a sneaky idea that'll be the Amazon series that they'll do, because it's just it really lends itself to a series of. TV shows. Yeah, that sounds really super amazing. And we're all about theme here, so I'm glad to hear it. It's one of the most thematic.
I remember during that game, one of the most fun things was the dynamic sort of alliances that were happening from moment to moment. Because about halfway through Turning Point 2, both Guy and Nick realized that I'm not going to run out of operatives, and their operatives don't come back. So if they keep fighting each other, I was just going to get across the board and escape with my leader winning the game. So they had to stop fighting each other. But once my leader was dead, it was
straight back
alliance
to fighting
over.
Each other. Yeah.
Truce over. Well, it was a lesson for us all there, I feel. I'm going to move us along. So I've got a new section, which probably is going to be a one-off, but I don't know, I might come back with it. I've been having so much fun. So I'm sure many of you out there are all over the current trend of the moment, AI. So ChatGPT, this kind of thing, if you've used it to write your homework or get that work report done you didn't have time to do, well, this is a chance to have a guilt-free chance, because it turns out ChatGPT is shockingly decent at writing backstories for your kill team or backstories for your campaign. Do you want to write yourself a homebrew Space Marine chapter, any of these, and even the free versions. This is just ChatGPT 3.5. Others are available. So I just wanted to give you one example of just how I thought this was pretty reasonable. So I put into the prompt, I wrote this was the exact words I put in. Write a background for a Warhammer 40k orc warband of Storm Boys led by a knob called Deez Nero. They have been influenced and motivated by a weird boy called Denzel. They love their rocket packs. That's what I wrote. And this is verbatim what I got out. In the grim and unending universe of Warhammer 40,000, amidst the constant turmoil of endless war and chaos, there exists a raucous and belligerent orc warband known as the Sky Shredders. No, I thought that was a pretty damn good name for a bunch of Storm Boys.
That's a really good name.
Oh, hell yeah.
ChatGPT came up with that. Led by the towering and cunning knob Deez Nero, this warband of Storm Boys is notorious for their unrestrained enthusiasm for both aerial combat and explosive mayhem. Origins. The Sky Shredders were born amidst the wreckage of a planetary collision where two once thriving orc settlements clashed in a cosmic spectacle of violence and destruction. The two rival warbands, each led by a fierce war boss, collided their massive spacefaring ships during a power struggle over a resource-rich celestial body. In the wake of this cataclysmic event, Deez Nero emerged as a cunning knob who managed to unite the surviving Storm Boys from both sides under a common banner. If you're thinking the language here is over the top, I think that's kind of normal for ChatGPT to go over the top. But in Warhammer 40k, this is absolutely appropriate. The influence of Denzel. At the heart of the warband's unpredictable and eccentric behavior is the enigmatic weird boy Denzel. Often shrouded in a haze of psychedelic energy, Denzel possesses an uncanny ability to manipulate the erratic wah energy that flows through the orc collective consciousness. With his frenzied prophecies and incomprehensible visions, Denzel stokes the Storm Boys' fanaticism and fuels their fervor for combat. I'll just do the rocket pack devotion. What sets the Sky Shredders apart from the other warp bands is their obsession with rocket packs. The Storm Boys of this warband sport massive ramshackle rocket packs strapped to their backs, each one a testament to the orc's unmatched ingenuity when it comes to engineering explosive contraptions. These rocket packs allow the Storm Boys to achieve breathtaking aerial maneuvers, swooping down from the skies to unleash a rain of DACA on unsuspecting enemies. Now, given the prompt that I put in, I think this is all pretty decent, interesting stuff. It goes on a little bit.
It goes on a fair amount, but it's goes got on a fair so amount. Much context and everything. Like, yeah. It's even got the slang.
Yeah, yeah. So my tip out there is to have a go at this. Put in as little or as much information as you want. Obviously, the more prompt elements you put in, the more specific it's going to be. But I was pretty amazingly, you know, pleasantly surprised with that. So here's a challenge. If you do this with your group, send in your results and for your background, for your team, something like that. Incidentally, I don't work for ChatGPT, so, you know, this is not a this is not a plug. Other AIs out there are available. But yeah, have a go. Have you guys had a go of any of this?
Yeah, I did my word bearer. I got the bones of my word bearer's warp coven team from ChatGPT, and then played around with it. I did have a whole interlinked narrative with Sal's Grey Knights and the Justicar that was leading a squad, but unfortunately, or fortunately, I guess for my in-game lore, the Justicar died immediately in our first match, and then failed all his casualty tests, and then died permanently.
I think I re-rolled that as well. I had a med base, so I rolled 3 ones in a row.
Yeah. I remember.
Yeah.
I've actually used ChatGPT for generating some random backgrounds, but I didn't actually take them, but I have used Midjourney to generate art for for them. So that's kind of cool. Would definitely recommend. Jason, I have to ask, how did you come up with the name D's Narrow?
Well, we'll go on to this a bit later, but I've got my idea, because this is the Harlequin troupe proxy, so they're all actors. So it's De Niro.
Robert De Niro.
De Niro.
I got Pactino and is Denzel. My so I've got Pitts is one of my guys. Yeah, but I was thinking of running a competition for naming the Storm Boys after favorite actors. So we I might suggest that later on. But
I don't know, like Sean, you had a look on your face when I asked that question. Is it because you were thinking exactly the same thing I was thinking?
What yes, were you thinking? It was the famous joke on this family friendly podcast of these nuts.
Yeah, yeah. That's what
if we play, I'm never gonna call him D's Nero. I'm always just gonna say, okay, now my caster can melt. Is gonna shoot at D's nuts.
Ironically, the orcs don't have them, so it's not a problem. That's not how they procreate.
Likewise, inspired by Barbie, they're just flat in front like Ken.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely legit. Reminds
me of my crew, which were all named after Michelin, like Michelin star chefs. And I think my leader was Gordon, as in, you know, then in brackets Ramsay.
Yeah.
As you can see, folks, lots of fun to be had there. Off you go, and you'll probably never do a shred of work ever again because you can get a bit lost in it. Now I've got some brilliant news. After several episodes where Sean and I were like, no, we still haven't played any of the Morok campaign, we've played some of the Morok campaign.
Oh, yeah. We went to Bad Moon Cafe when they opened the doors, and we left only marginally before they were going to close them on Sunday. We spent a whole day at the cafe table, and we got a couple of games in.
Still only got two games in. In the space of time that a tournament would get four in,
we did really take our time, and both of us were pretty rusty for nearly a month and a half since I last played Kill Team, and you've been swanning off playing a bunch of Blood Bowl, so we were like, I forgot my measuring gauges and all my engage and conceal tokens, so we were doing our best with what we had.
We did okay. So just a recap. We've in the first two games, the orcs did pretty well. So in game one, they plundered some supplies successfully. In the second game, they overran the perimeter. And going into game three, it's pretty desperate stuff for the Imperial. So the next game, mission three, is compound assault. So In the scheme of our narrative, we're thinking this is the big one. We've got to hold them here, and if we don't, it's bad news. So, no more retreats, screamed Sergeant Nelson. Here we make our stand. The recon platoon are in a desperate position. The unexpected fury of the commando's last assault has left the guardsmen shaken. They've been through too much to give up now. And a new determination forms. So, how did the game go?
Well, in this fight, the commandos were the attackers and had the tricky, tricky job of assaulting the landing pad. We were given an additional scout option to help. I think whichever one we chose, we got to resolve it twice.
Yeah.
Was how it played out. However, a defensive battle really suited the veteran guardsmen, and they prevailed.
Woo!
We had sniper and spotter up on vantage and in cover. the star of the show on the defender's side was the demo guardsman, who on his own killed no less than five commandos.
he bared.
Only two of which were with the bomb. He himself clubbed a poor, defenseless Grop to death and bayoneted two previously wounded boys, and even survived the battle. And on my side, the orc sniper was apparently massively annoying, just simply refusing to die, even when everything and the kitchen sink was thrown at him. He just kept making all his saves.
I think he had his bulletproof deodorant on or something. pretty, like but to, that was good.
I'd like to think that that demo guardsman was beating orcs to death with like the spent detonator.
Yeah, yeah, just clubbing them,
or with the melter bomb and just hoping it didn't go off. that was a good game, but at least I won one, so that was good.
You did.
We defended the compound, and I think narratively that was actually pretty fit what we were doing. The desperate last stand.
Yeah, you repelled us.
However, next mission, mission 4, emergency transmission. So this is the setup. The humans had won themselves a short breather. Cunningham, the recon platoon comms expert, knew what to do. We have to get word out to HQ. These commandos are just the start, he gasped to Nelson. These feathering greenskins have already seized the antenna and turned it off. Lock and load, growled the sergeant. It's time to counterattack. We must recapture the Vox Tower.
How did this I just one remembered go? Which one this was. This yeah. was really good fun.
Was it?
so
spoiler.
The guardsmen found themselves quite hemmed in behind the hab block. To start off with, and there were some worrying open spaces to cross to try and recapture two other bits of the terrain. Ever wary of the crazy dynamite-carrying troops, the Wexmouth men were just not aggressive enough and let the orcs get the tactical initiative. The sniper couldn't get a good position, and the demo operative never got a chance to set off his bomb. And I'd like to add that... I got to use this sneaky git strategic ploy where I put my sniper boy up on top of the comms tower right in the middle of the map. And you were just so terrified of him that you didn't peek your head out.
No, I made a big error there. And I feel like there's two things. You either got to like go all out to kill him or just accept the fact that he's going to kill a person a turn. And I sort of did the compromise of try and shoot him a bit whilst also not really just running out. So, yeah, I played that one quite badly. Although I think I got him down to like a couple of wounds or something at one point.
You did. But, he was down to two.
But that was a tricky one for me. I don't think I played it very well. But it was it was good. I think we had two very, very good games. And we've set up for game 4. So the counterattack on the Vox antenna had run out of steam. Damn, thought Cunningham. We are on our own now. His head bowed for a moment. It won't be much longer before thousands of orcs descend on us. He made a silent prayer to the Emperor, hoping his devotion and purity were enough. Cunningham raised his head when sand whips against his cheek. A colossal mica storm was approaching. This will slow any war. Next mission, outrun the storm.
This one's going to be super fun. Spoilers.
I think I've played that one. It's where you take mortal wounds if you're out in the open and you're not in cover.
Exactly. The wind hurts.
Yeah. and hopefully it'll hold off the war for a bit. So, that's where we are. I think we feel it's gone pretty amazingly. What we haven't done, we realized we can't wait till the episode to do our roles because we were mid-game. So I'm afraid we did do our roles. I think I managed to avoid any injuries, whereas I think the orcs are now...
We're hobbling and limping. I've got three operatives that are injured, two of which have two injuries.
Yeah. All I can say, one word, medbay. There we go. That's what you need.
What, medbay?
No, you're right. Doesn't make sense, does it? Anyway, that was really good. We got done that. We're gonna continue with the Morok campaign. I can't wait to play. Hopefully, we'll get a date in the diary for next month. Of course, we have some mail. Reaching into the mailbag.
We do. Luckily, I don't have to reach in too deep because we've only got the one. But it is from our friend Rusted Bolt Gun, or as we like to call him, Mike. And he's written in, "Hi guys, as your mailbag was a little sparse last time out, I thought I'd tell you about our latest Kill Team game. Junior Bolt Gun was recently 9, so we played Kill Team Light. No conceal, no tac ops, minimal extra modifiers, and it helps my old brain too. Junior really enjoys a story. He wants an objective rather than deleting models, and especially loves the Warhammer Plus narrative Kill Team battle report from Christmas 2021. Those who may remember, that was the Space Wolves versus Dered Gobbo. So he came up with this board. The objective was to locate the power node and take it back to your deployment zone. The node was located in one of the buildings. The two scrap piles also counted as buildings. And searching a building costs 1 AP, and on a roll of 6, on a D6, located the power node. Any other roll meant a second D6 roll was required to see who you disturbed. 1 to 4 delivered 2 grots, a 5 an orc boy, and a 6 scored a runt herd, who we were counting as a commando knob. We recruits versus Phobos, scavenging the buildings, generated lots of grots, armed with grot guns, which were 2 damage, 5 up hit, 4, 5 damage, and a combat blade equivalent to a chopper. Jesus, who kitted out these grots? With their 2 runt herds and an orc boy throughout the game, but no node. The last remaining Phobos, Reaver Sergeant, found the power node in turn 5, by which time we'd reduced the search roll to a toss of a coin as we hadn't found it. The crew finished off the sergeant, who was limping back to base on 7 wounds, and the crew hounds relayed to their end of the board with the bow hunter picking it up and taking it over the line. Phew! Exhausting stuff. I provided minimal input on the design of the game, Junior came up with the concept and designed the board, and I helped with a few stats and conditions. For example, how often you could search the buildings. One day we'll graduate to Kill Team proper, if I can handle the full rules. But the big question is, have we played more Kill Team than Jason? I'm only kidding. I know you're progressing with the Morok campaign. Looking forward to the next episode and all the narrative goings on, Mike.
That sounds a brilliant mission.
Jim is talented.
Yeah.
Yeah. Get him on the rules team.
I want to play this scenario. I love the grots. I love the idea of the grots. Can we arrange this cell? This sounds great.
I think it's already arranged. Yeah. It sounds amazing. Yeah. It's like a 3. You have an AI faction, basically, right? It's like reverse Santa Claus mission, essentially. Where you're going from house to house and taking things.
I love the idea that there's just sleeping orc knobs in like scrap piles, and they're like, "Oi,
this is my scrap pile. Shove off."
I love the idea that this could be the Christmas game that you play tradition every year. We play a traditional game of Kill Team Light. Shout out to the dads out there. This sounds like great dad hammering.
Speaking of dad hammering, the Kill Team Casuals have just opened up a Dad Hammer Kid team on their Discord, and there are so many jean short jokes and photos of dads and children all playing Warhammer together. Like, that's been great fun to watch.
Mm-hmm. Loads of dads indoctrinating their children into... Now, we don't worship the Emperor, but many people do.
I was just shouting them out.
That's fantastic. So as usual, if you have a letter that you want to send us, we are available on onceuponakillteam@gmail.com, or send us a message via Instagram. We also hang around on several Discord servers, notably the Battle Brothers tabletop narrative server. Get in touch, which now brings us to the main topic of the show, review of Ashes of Faith. Now, this only came out a couple of days ago, so this couldn't be more topical for us to talk about. No, I'm only kidding. Obviously, we promised this quite some time ago, and life and other Kill Team projects got in the way. But I still think this is massively relevant. This was Kill Team's first standalone narrative box and campaign, which I think is significant, and I think could really pave the way for what we see as our future in this game. We're painfully aware that a lot of people couldn't acquire this box, even though they wanted to. So we'll be talking a little bit later, as these guys have done, on doing this campaign with teams you didn't get in the box. So, and I'm sure, you know, if you really want to, you can get these rules out there. So let's start off in the box itself. You get, crucially, no terrain. Now, I don't know how you fellas think, but I thought that was a plus, actually. I didn't want any terrain.
It was a bit of a reprieve, wasn't it?
Less plastic to paint. Although there was plenty of plastic in the box.
Yeah, I mean, they gave... It was really good value for money. I mean, you got so many miniatures that you, in the actual box itself. I think they gave you some terrain. You probably finished the job quicker, actually, because it was like 42 between the two teams.
Yeah,
I think.
Plenty.
There's a bit of a clearance, I think, because the Sisters of Silence and Scion Sprues were just like thrown in there almost. But yeah, it's an amazing box, I think. Yeah, as we talked about before, Nick and I played it for a little bit, and I do think, Jason, that this is like still pretty topical, because I don't think in the London Wargaming Guild I've seen a lot of people actually play this campaign. I know Nick Collins did play, he played the entire thing before. He started after you and I did, Nick, and they just played in like one weekend, banged out seven games. So
I wholly believe that he just rattled out all the games in 2 days.
Yeah.
Sounds doable. Just going back to what you get in the box, because I'm just wondering if this is a template for what they'll do. So you get a Ashes of Faith sort of team book. So this is very much in the same line as, like, you know, the Morok book or the Into the Dark book, and it includes the two teams. It includes, I think, I don't know if you guys read the fluff, but I think if you're not that familiar with either the Inquisition or Chaos, you get a really good lore background to both of those teams. If you aren't decided on which Chaos cult god is for you, they run down some good some good potential cult ideas, and I quite like the fact in there that there's and this is something we can touch on in a bit, but there's no two inquisitional agent teams are alike and no two cults are alike, so this is the opportunity to make this whatever you want it to be. It's the ultimate, and particularly with the with the inquisitorial agent team, you get
infinitely kit bashable.
Well, yeah, infinitely kit bashable, but you get loads of choices just on the seven agents. But then you get, I forgot, is it five different auxiliary choices or six?
It's six. Yeah.
Six. How amazing is that?
Technically, it's seven if you count the fact that you can take the actual Inquisition operatives twice instead of
an
ancillary.
So that's pretty amazing. And then the Chaos Cult, obviously, you can flavor your... what kind of cult are you? That would be the... I feel that's a future episode. What kind of cult are you? So you get that book. You get a campaign book, which is separate. So this is just runs you through the campaign. And I would say the campaign book also comes with more fluff on the specific hive city you're in. It's Exilus, I think it's called. It gives you a real background to the campaign. You're in a part of this hive called Deepwell. I think it's pretty good. I just as a story, if you want a bit of bedtime reading, or like I say, if you're not familiar with these things, I think it's a fantastic background, and you could go, you know, really bad. On top of that, you get territory cards. You also get Inquisition and cult decks. You get investigation reward cards, persuasion benefit cards, and territory tiles. And everyone loves a sticker. You get a whole sheet of stickers. So I think as you mentioned, Nick, this sounds like pretty decent value for money, I thought.
Yeah, I mean, just all the chaos stuff alone was cost the same as the box. Once you throw in the extra teams and all the materials as well, it's you can see why it's sold out in basically 5 minutes, ignoring like all the production issues for Leviathan.
Yeah.
Also, both the teams were cracked. Absolutely not balanced. That
helps as well for selling it to competitive players. Yeah.
Well, let's deep dive into that. So we've got two teams. So not only are these teams like very suitable for this campaign, but these are standalone teams on their own. You can play these in tournaments. They're official, you know, proper rounded teams. They've got all the normal stuff you'd have, including narrative stuff like spec ops, rare equipment, all of that juicy, lovely narrative stuff that we come to see. So, and what's good is we've got to a point now where we've had a data slate release. So any initial madness surely has been rectified. But my question is, I suppose, what are your feelings? Let's start with the inquisitorial agents. What's your feeling to either play or play against these guys?
Shall I speak for playing against them? Because I've not actually played as them, but Sal and I did have a game where he played as them and I took commandos into them, I believe.
Yeah.
I think they're a very, what's the way to describe them? I think they're a very kill teamy kill team, if that makes sense. As in, they can be whatever you want them to be, because there's so many options available. And they actually have quite a lot of good, decent shooting, and before the balanced data slate, you could have three plasma guns, including a blast plasma gun, which is just generically...
And a melter.
And a melter, yeah, which is just generically very strong. So they've got a lot... I think they have a lot of strengths. I don't think they're an easy team to pilot, though, because you've got so many options that you have a kind of a puzzle with just constructing your roster before you even start. And then
they're quite high brain capacity, aren't they, because every operative does something almost completely different to every other operative.
Yeah, and they work off combos as well, so a lot of the strength comes from knowing what you need to deny with absolute authority, and setting up your retaining dice with like the mystic, and increasing your number of attack dice with the attack order, and the defense order with the servo skull and the interrogator. They're a fun team, but they're definitely not an easy team to just pilot. You need practice with them. So playing orcs into them was quite good, because orcs are relatively simple to pilot, and they've got quite a straightforward game plan, which is just move up the board, stay on conceal, and then just charge them, because ultimately you're still a mostly 7-wound, 5-up save team that dies to a stiff breeze if you do get hit.
Yeah, I mean, that's all true. They're a very tricky team to pilot, because most of the operatives are hitting on fours, but, you know, stepping away from like the mechanics of it, I thought, like, it's a really, really great team if you're a little bit like me, and you get tired of playing the same team over and over, because what you're doing is you're essentially playing seven teams.
Yeah.
Seven for the price of one.
Seven for the price of, well, no, seven for the price of seven. you have to buy the models.
Oh, yeah.
And
sorry.
Paint them up. So.
Buy seven, get seven for the same price.
I guess it's three teams for the price of one, because you get the Scions and you get the Sisters of Silence in the box.
Yeah.
Which is all really, really fun and really cool. And it's really not so, first of all, you know, because of all the ancillary support options, it's like extremely fun to come up with backgrounds for the ancillary support. Like, especially over the course of a narrative campaign, because you didn't start off with an exaction squad at your beck and call, but you spend two requisition points, and now you do have a squad of five exaction operatives that you can call upon. Where did they come from? Why are they working with you? What inquisitorial strings did you pull on to get these guys to work under the thumb of your interrogator? And even within the Inquisition team themselves, like, there's a couple of operatives that really stand out, are just like freaking cool. The Death World veteran, for example, he's basically Rambo. He's Sly Marbo, but like kill team sized. He's got a knife that on a crit does 7 damage. It's only got one attack.
Yeah.
So you can charge somebody, and I think it's got a lethal 4 up. So
something like that, yeah.
So you have a 50% chance of just killing a 7-wound model immediately on first strike, on first blood. Another Rambo reference. There you go. and he's got like an ability to ignore the first hit he takes in melee in a turning point. So he's like a beast in combat, and then.
I think he has charge from conceal as well, so he's a bit like a commando in that respect. Whereas...
I don't think. Well, yes, actually, I think he can charge from conceal. You might be right there. But yeah, it's a bunch of different operas that are really, really fun. Like, okay, the model that comes in the box for the Hexorcist, which is the old guy with a shotgun.
I'm a fire starter. He's key.
Yeah, he is.
I really hate the model. I really hate the model. I kitbashed mine. I used an exaction operative and gave him a weird head and a bunch of books strapped all over him so that, you know, he's like extremely, extremely... He was too zealous for the RBTs. He got kicked out. So, and he's got an ability where he just picks an operative, shouts like litanies of fury at them, and they suddenly can't use their abilities.
Yeah. He's the big red button that just says no, or the Gandalf, you shall not pass, you know.
Yeah, I think my favorite of the bunch is the Mystic, because despite the inbox model being blindfolded, it hits on threes. You can give it equipment to make his auto pistol.
No.
It's a bolt
hits
pistol, and it hits on twos, and it's indirect, and you can buff it up to bolt pistol, and if he's buffed himself with his powers, he's also got 5 shots, I think, or retain or something like that. He's very good at just walking up and shooting someone on conceal who
basically a blind gunslinger.
Yeah
that makes reminds sense me, that they have indirect. Have you watched the Lego movie?
Yeah, well, which
Vitruvius,
one?
The Lego movie. Vitruvius, okay. their blind Gandalf has something called blind courage, where he just doesn't know what danger's going on around him. And just walks up, and seemingly fate just avoids him with all danger whatsoever.
Oh, that's beautiful.
Lego 40K, that's got to be the next thing, surely.
Ooh, Lego 40K.
I've seen some AI mock-ups of Dark Elder ships, so...
Very family-friendly.
This is all sounding good. They almost sound too good, except they're not as too good as maybe the Chaos Cults. What's your experience playing these guys?
I mean, so I have played as them, and
I know.
You talked about it. I think in a previous episode, we played the boss battle with your Sentinel, with your Ogryn team versus my Chaos Cult. They've been tuned down a bit since then, but they are generically just very strong. I mean, you've got 15 operatives, lots of activations. Once you set up all your torments, they will just rampage across the board.
Torments are the big, scary ones.
Yeah, and usually they have either a 4-up save, or they fly, or they ignore traverse. They're just hard to kill and hit like a truck. They're a good team. I think they're quite fluffy. I mean, they feel like a Chaos Cult should feel, I think, like where you have these, you've got a bunch of really weak chaff, and then they all start mutating into something quite horrible quite quickly. So yeah, they're a good team, very thematic. I personally don't actually enjoy playing as them very much, because it's, I learned over the course of like 3 or 4 games with them, I don't like having no guns and no ability to interact with the opponent, like turn one or beginning of turn two, and it's just actually they're actually a bit tricky to pilot when you've got 15 models, and not move blocking yourself is a bit of a skill. Yeah.
That's too many models.
So speaking of the models themselves, what did you guys think? Because there's like a bunch of kits there, right? There's the little cultists, there's the mutants, and then there's the big old torments, but there's also the totally not ring wraiths from Lord of the Rings.
The Dark Commune.
The Dark Commune, yeah.
Dark Nazgul.
I actually quite like the models. I initially didn't like the Nazgul, but they kind of grew on me over the course of a few games. I think I really like the generic cultists. I actually think they did a really good job of.
I massively rate devotees. I think they're absolutely superb models, and they're all individual. So you get 10 absolutely unique sculpts, and that's bearing in mind these get blown off, you know, with a puff of wind, as we say, and and also my daughter's painted 5 of them, so you know they're now the inaugural models, which I now feel I can't change, but I'm really impressed. I don't like what's the one with the separate head,
Mind Witch.
Not a big fan of that one, but you know,
it's always fun when that model's on the board and you're trying to determine line of sight, like is it head or is it the mask on the thing it's holding, which is the actual head you're measuring from, because it can technically peek round corners for visibility.
Handy. Now here's my question to you.
Which model? Oh my god, I can't remember which model it was. It might still be the Mind Witch, but one of the three leaders of the Dark Commune is like unreasonably so has, I think what it's called is a dump truck.
That's the cult leader. She's
is the that
one
the
who,
demagogue?
Yeah, the one who forcibly mutates people. Yeah, she's got like a tiny staff, tiny walking stick staff thing that she has as well. She actually kind of vaguely reminds me of, if you've seen American Dad, like Roger from that, the alien.
I apologise to our listeners who've just had their experience of Chaos Cult ruined by the image of that. Right, so I've got a question for you guys. I almost think these two teams are the best narrative teams that have appeared for Kill Team. If you're into modelling, both of them have endless possibilities for kit bashing, proxying these models for something else. If you're interested in background and lore, oh, that's kind of my thing. You could go crazy on both of these teams. You could take them from books, you could take them from your imagination, you can take them from the internet with ChatGPT, and are these just not the best for narrative? Anyone want to combat me on that.
I think it could have easily have been gene stealer cults as well.
Yeah.
For the Inquisition to seek out and put down an uprising. But it's again super thematic. Like, what a great pairing off against each other.
We're still waiting for those Terminators and gene stealers. You know. Ha.
We'll never get them. We'll never get them. Yeah. Right. I'm going to move us along. So, how do you even play this damn campaign? I'm going to briefly run through the campaign sequence, and then we'll ask some people who've actually played this. So, easy enough. You have a battle between your two kill teams, and this involves picking a territory. And by territory, the game comes with how many is it? Nine? Ten?
Nine, I think.
Nine different territories. And these are named territories, and you get tiles for them. And what I think is pretty cool, and I think you could use in
they have different rules.
Yeah, they've got different rules
as well.
Yeah, yeah. So this is really cool. So I think these could be used in other games that you play. So absolutely. The territory cards, I think, are fabulous. And then you get the game comes with a number of missions, and there's an initial starting mission, and there's a particular ending mission, and then in between there's some other missions you can do. So you have a game of kill team. That's all cool. Normal rules, more or less. And then following a battle, you get to draft some cards. I mentioned earlier that the game comes with some cards. And then you get to bid on territories for control. Now, here we come to what the whole objective of this campaign is. Largely, you're trying to control territories. You're trying to control real estate, which I'm mildly disappointed at, because I kind of feel it should be slightly more interesting than controlling territories. But that's largely what you're doing. And then in addition to that, you can also do some influencing and investigation. But I'm not sure whether they're very big aspects of the game. So,
they're huge.
Okay. So can you guys just briefly run us through your campaign so far? And in particular, I'm interested in how the post game bit goes. But how's it panned out for you at the moment?
Do you want to take this, Nick, or should I talk about it?
I mean, I can start. We started with generating the map. We ended up with a bunch of really thematic assets for our campaign. So we got the military intelligence headquarters, like the foundries.
You don't start with all of the territories. There's like 9 or 12 territories, but you only play with 6 of them. So you shuffle the territory cards, and then you draw them, and those are the territories you're playing for.
Yeah. So then we basically created the map, which was quite thematic, and there's a lot of really good lore actually in the on the cars themselves, like, which lends itself to building a campaign around it. So we generated the map, if you like, first, and then we played the cult revealed mission, which is the one you start with.
Yeah.
Except in this instance, the cult was a commando team embedded in the city, which was basically in our lore sabotaging the defenses in the advance of the war, basically trying to take over the city. So I think we started on the foundry mission, which was actually quite thematic, because obviously each territory has its own rules attached to it, and we were on the one which was the entire battlefield was covered in smog, which means that you basically, if you're outside of 6 inches, you're obscured, and you have to roll a d6 every battle round to see if the smog disappears.
It never disappeared.
No. And if you're playing as commandos, when you can charge from conceal and knowing you can't be shot whilst you move up, it's really
and
great.
I'm playing Kasserkin, which is a fully shooting team. So it wasn't great for me. And let's also mention the fact that the territory we were playing for. It was a refinery, and I think the bonus for playing on a refinery was that if you have any explosive weapons, such as a rocket launcher or a grenade or a flamethrower, it does one extra attack.
Yeah, yeah. And when you can load up on stick bombs and dynamite and the Burner Boys flamer, that was also quite potent.
Yeah, that mission did not go well for the caster cannon. Let me tell you that.
I didn't know that all the different territories had different rules and modifiers.
Yes, so that was the modifier for the refinery, which is that, oh, there's unstable promethium everywhere. If you use an explosive weapon or a flame weapon, it'll be more dangerous. So so there was that. And then there was the... There's the territory modifier, and then there's the mission modifier, which was the smog. That was just the mission. I think the mission was that we needed to take down each of the other person's operatives and then capture them because they left like tokens.
Yeah, behind. It was a quite simple mission actually. The reveal the cult one. It is basically a death match. There's none of this. There wasn't really much of go capture an objective. It was actually kill team instead of points team.
I just remembered, even though the Kasterkin lost, we managed to capture one operative, which was the Commando Grot.
Yeah.
And when Nick was doing his casualty rolls, the Grot died.
Yeah. He died under interrogation. Yeah, because he was the guy who got him off the board, he was like your only survivor for the match.
Yeah,
as well.
Much. Yeah, pretty much. So vengeance for the rest of his brothers there.
No. Yeah.
His twin brother came back the next game, but yeah.
Anyway, so that was the game, but we should get into the post game stuff, which is the drafting. Would you say, Jason?
Yeah, I'm interested in this.
So the draft stage works in a very interesting way. Depending on your victory, depending on how many victory points you earned in the game, you get a certain number of conspirator cards. Now these conspirator cards are essentially agents that you have accumulated enough resources to hire. And you can spend these agents in different territories to do one of three things. You can either control, you can investigate, or you can persuade. And the idea behind it is that you place these cards face down on different territories, so that your opponent doesn't know what you're going for in different territories. And then at the end, you flip them and reveal, and you get either control points for that territory, you get persuasion points for that territory, or you get investigation points for that territory. And each of those give you different benefits.
Yeah, so if you control a territory, you basically get a benefit that which just carries on for the rest of the campaign and in your matches. So for instance, my commando...
that's persuasion.
Oh, that's control, persuasion.
Control is what helps you win the campaign.
I might misremember. I thought they had a benefit as well, but they're
persuasion has benefits.
Yeah. But yeah, the control, you get a control point when you win the match. So in the territory you played, you'll get one. Then you'll get your conspirators, and then you can basically bid them to get more territory to control it. I think the more interesting thing is the persuasion and the investigation, though, because the persuasion benefits can actually be quite huge. Like, I think you've got one cell which lets you... resolve a second scouting option, which basically means for
it
your
gives
Kasterkin,
me a free fortify option.
Yeah, and you already have a second scouting option with your Kasterkin, so you effectively get to do all three in the scouting phase.
Nice.
And I think my commando's start with like an extra 5 equipment points to go with the 4 from my expanded armory from one from one of my territories I control. And
so many there are stick bombs.
Well, only one stick bomb. But everyone gets a chopper. and then the investigation rewards are all. They're one time use, so you spend 4 points to investigate a territory, and once you've done it, it's exhausted. You can't do it again. But the cards themselves for the investigations are incredibly powerful. There's like, to give the audience kind of a flavor for it, you have ones which where you, if you die, you just get back up, I think, on full health. Or there's another one where you can shoot on death at +1 ballistic skill, and you get like an extra attack dice, or start with like an extra D3 CP for the beginning of the game. Or they're all incredibly powerful and can be quite game changing.
It's literally a one time trump card that you can pull out in one game over the campaign.
Sounds good. So how many games in are you now?
We played 2. We need to get the third in at some point, but we're getting towards the halfway point of the campaign. The commandos are currently in the lead because they also took the second game after the burner boy suicided one Kaskin, killed him, and then flamed another one, and actually managed to take 8 wounds off with one go, which point the activation advantage meant it was quite hard to come back from that. It was quite thematic, though. Basically, the Ninja Grot, all the boys held off the Kasakin whilst the Ninja Grot got into the vault and sabotaged the void shields because we were in a Mechanicus facility, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, it's... the thing about the draft stage, or less, like the post-match stage, all of this bidding and stuff, is that it sounds really complicated on paper and when you're talking about it. But once you go through the sequence just once, it becomes really intuitive and you kind of understand, oh, this isn't actually that much thing. You get a certain number of cards which you can spend to control a territory. And you do that in secret with your opponent, alternating when you put down a card. And that's about it. That's basically it.
So just to remind the listeners, so the maximum number of games that this campaign is either 6 or 7.
Seven. Yeah. There's a initial game, then there's 6 games, and then after that you look at who controls most of the territories. They're supposedly the winner of the campaign, but then you have a final ritual game where you know you determine whether it's a total victory or a Pyrrhic victory. So for example, after 6 games Nick controls all the territories, which he probably will because I'm losing badly.
No, you'll come back.
These commandos are going to enact some kind of ritual, which you know you can flavor that up as something else.
Gork and Mork.
And then the Kasakin will do a last ditch attempt to try and sabotage it, so that even though they've lost, the Hive City is in flames, it's in ruins, they still managed to stop the big thing that the commandos were actually trying to do. So it's a Pyrrhic victory for the commandos if the caster can win that final game.
There's some real good lore in the back of the Ashes of Faith book, talking through like the consequences of what a total victory looks like on the Chaos and Imperial side, Pyrrhic victory.
Yeah, I'm not gonna spoil it by reading it out, but it looks good. You're gonna want to get to the end of this campaign to do it. So I've got a couple. I think this gives a gist to our listeners, but I've got a couple of questions for you, and I think I know the answers. So, are you enjoying it? Do you think you'll get to the end? I guess is my first question.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it's really fun. Like, it's kind of like Kill Team, but with like almost like a Dawn of War skin on top of it. Like the fact that you're controlling territories and get benefits that I given my in to 40k was Dawn of War, it gives me a real big nostalgia for
Nick
that.
Nick loves Dawn of War.
Is that on one of these fancy computers?
Blood Ravens.
Yeah, my Marine Army is Blood Ravens, because they're what brought me into the franchise.
Very good. Okay, so who out there should be picking up Ashes of Faith, or at least having a go at this campaign system? What kind of player is going to love this?
You're going to want a regular partner for this. So that's one thing.
You're going to need a friend.
You're going to need a friend for this.
Uh-oh.
Oh, no. We're setting the bar too high here.
You're going to have to find someone you'll want to meet on 7 occasions.
Or live with.
True. Or live with, yeah.
Extreme, sure. Is being a marriage vow. Will you play 7 campaign games of Kill Team? I do.
I do.
Well, I haven't managed it with my partner, and I don't think you've managed to persuade your wife either, Sal, to play Kill Team. But
she's more of an Underworlds player.
She's playing Underworld. She's doing grand.
But yeah, I think you do want someone you play with regularly to actually progress the campaign, because I think it might. You probably could do pick up and play if you played the Imperial side with like your narrative group buddies, if there's a wider group, but the opposing faction, if you like, might not be quite as consistent in terms of like the post game sequence and like that macro overlay running it. But I think it works best as like a two player game.
Yeah, for sure. And I think it's really helpful when you play with somebody like Nick, who, you know, is really good about the narrative side of it. Like, because we love to make stories out of what happens in these places. So, you have to be a little bit, even if you lose the game, it's like that is a story, you know, like that adds to the narrative of what's going on. And that's fun.
A couple of episodes we had our future of Kill Team narrative, and one of the sort of takeaways from that was a kind of generic desire to want to have games that mean something to win, and that mean, you know, that win means something in the next game. Do you think this game system answers that kind of desire? Does winning mean something? And does it carry on into the next game?
Yeah, I think there are some actual stakes in the campaign.
You're playing for keeps.
Yeah, because I enjoy narrative, but sometimes when you're playing, if you're just your only goal is to progress your spec op, sometimes you can be like, well, I don't really care if I win or lose, which can have its pros and cons. But
yeah.
But there are some actual stakes. But I can remember a game we played, Sal, where it was my Raptors versus your Imperial Fist Custodes. And it was basically like I wanted to get my spec op, you wanted to get your spec op, and we kind of like had a little fight in the middle, but then had a tactical retreat because it was like nobody really cared.
We made a narrative out of it, though, because like we're both playing Imperium. Like we came into conflict because of, you know, miscommunication and conflicting orders and objectives, but we don't really want to kill loyal, you know, servants of the Emperor, so we sort of just, you know, deactivated a power fist, you know, we shot at non-vital areas and just sort of backed off after we got the thing that we came for.
Well, I'm disgusted that poor behavior. That sounds really good. Okay, so it sounds like this does answer sort of one of the you know.
I would say, to your exact question, like the fact that you get the number of victory points you score in the game affects the number of conspirator cards you get, which means it directly affects how many territories you can control or persuade or investigate. With that seems impactful without being extremely unbalancing, because the difference in conspirator cards is just like one or two. And it doesn't feel like, well, I lost this first game, that means the rest of the campaign is just completely destroyed because he got two more conspirators than I did, and that means that he's so far ahead of me, I'm never going to be able to play. It's not that bad, but it's important.
Yeah, I think one of the complaints can be about Necromunda can be that if you have a really bad like first couple games and then you're going up into a really strong team who've like won their first two or three games, there's kind of like a snowball effect where basically in like half two of the campaign after you've had your rest week, the teams that started just the teams that had the bad start just can't catch up at that point. Whereas you'd have to have you'd basically have to win like four or five games in a row where it'd been like a huge differential, I think, to not have a shot of coming back in the Ashes of Faith campaign. So I think it feels more fair in that sense because you can't, it's quite hard for you to just run away with it. And
the actual battle honors affect the snowball effect more than the Ashes of Faith supplements.
And I think the thing I do like about it as well is that even if they do run away with it, you can still do the ritual. You can still win the ritual and then completely mess up their end game where they win, but they don't quite get their way.
Seems fair. Yeah. Seems fair. Now, you guys have been a great example because the box, I think, does offer the, you know, a fantastic pairing of teams where, you know, you couldn't get a better. It's hard to think of a better narrative combo than Inquisitorial Agents and Chaos Cult Team. But for our listeners out there, what suggested pairings of team do you think would be absolutely amazing? I'll start with my suggestion of Wormblade versus any Imperial team. Mm. But I think that would be amazing because Wormblade seems to be very close to Chaos Cult in sort of the feel. Yeah. But you've got suggestions as well, I think.
I mean, I can go with one. To be honest, like Dark Eldar versus, I'll say generically Imperium, but like any faction really, because the fact that the only reason they're in real space is to take slaves anyway, is you can. I think you could have a real fun campaign where you've got a Hand of the Archon team, which are basically trying to kidnap civilians and a whole bunch of other stuff for fun, and you're playing the defender to try and stop them. Or you want to go for more of a kind of a political intrigue kind of campaign and flip it on its head. You could totally do
Dark Elder versus Dark Elder.
Well, yeah, you could do that as well. I think they did actually have like a gang war kind of supplement in their Ninth Edition Codex. But I was also thinking more like if you wanted to do Imperium on Imperium, you could totally do Novitiates or Sisters versus another faction because they're just not zealous enough. So you need to wipe them out.
Sounds fair.
I really like the two Dark Eldar versus each other, and you can have it in the streets of Komara.
Mm. Oh yeah, yeah, hunting grounds. So I'm gonna sort of try and flip the actual Ashes of Faith teams. Imagine Imperial Cults versus ex-Inquisitor Renegades. So the Inquisition team are the Chaos Operatives, where you've got, you know, instead of Vetguard, you have Blooded Models, or, you know, what have you. And on the Imperial side, instead of having on the Chaos Cult side, instead of having a Chaos Cult, you have an Imperial Cult with Kordar gang members.
Yeah. Mm.
And, you know, when you mutate them, they turn into, when you have these little devotees with little clubs, you mutate them, they turn into, I don't know, priests that have been, with chainswords that have been imbued with the holy power of the Emperor. And
the Redemptionists.
The Redemptionists, and when they mutate to Torments, you turn them into Legion of the Damned Terminators.
Ooh. Okay, that's a good
summoned one. through sheer faith in the Emperor.
Exactly, exactly.
Sean, it's got. Oh, you're about to suggest Death Watch versus.
I was gonna pair them off against your Wormblade, mainly because that's one of my favorite Death Watch short stories.
Yes, I agree.
Death Watch Shadowbreaker has some Tau gene stealers.
How about Death Watch versus a 10 gene stealer hive fleet team?
Hive fleet.
You totally could do that. I mean, they'd be like Yomgol type gene stealers, just infecting the populace.
In my mind, if the Tyranids are already there, it's a bit late.
Might not bother then, eh?
Yeah.
But they could be the wrong hive fleet.
That's true. The wrong flavor.
If any of you listeners have a suggestion for a pairing that you'd like to suggest, please email the show and we'll read them out on the next episode. So my final on this segment really is, so it sounds like this is a winner. We all think this is pretty much a winner. Sure. Is there anything in the format, if they did another set, is there anything you'd like to tweak in the format itself? Or would you be happy if it was something very similar?
I think I quite like the format. I suppose if there was a way to, and I'm not sure what this would be, but if there was a way to widen it up so it's not just a kind of a two-player box, whereas it's more of a, you know, if you have a narrative campaign group, that there's some way to bring
other players into it. The only problem with that is that you have to schedule games, because you can't have some people playing more games than others and then winding up controlling more territory.
Yeah, it wouldn't lean into our ad hoc nature, would it?
I think there are, because we read out one from Max a little while ago, who's in a kill team group in Germany, and they sound like they have Friday night sessions. Everybody turns up on Friday night. And they've had sort of, you know, themes. So that might work for groups that do that. You have like particular kill team nights. This could be.
Wonder what that's like. I mean, as a dungeon master, scheduling and conflicts is trying to get a group of five players together. But yeah, I mean, I think the format is kind of a winner for you know, between two players. But it would be interesting if there was a way to.
Okay, I think the next box would shake it up completely, because this one's all about like intrigue and pulling apart the political thriller and vying for territories and everything. I think the next narrative box may go for something completely different.
Yeah,
could be, yeah.
And it's also an opportunity for GW to do their wackiest teams as well, because they can, you know, as far away as, you know, as they want to get from formal 40k army lists. And
I mean, they could do something like a treasure hunt. Like, I played a little bit of Warcry when it dropped 2 or 3 years ago, something like that. You had basically a narrative path which you're all following. Like, I think they're, like, it's all, the end goal is the same, where I think you're looking for like a Saurus like crashed ship, because they're technically aliens, but they're all working towards the same thing. So I could potentially see, like, if season 3 is like Jungle World and they're going to do a narrative box for that, like maybe the next one might be a treasure hunt instead of a kind of a city fighting kind of box.
Well,
that'd be fun.
We'll ask John from Can You Roll a Crit, our new friend, to get in touch with his chums at GW. We'll make that happen.
Man on the inside.
We know a guy who knows a guy. probably. Well, I think that's gonna be it for today's show. I hope all our listeners found that really interesting. I certainly did. I'm really stoked up for playing some of these once we've got through our Morrock campaign. Thank you so much, Sal and Nick, for coming on the show. You're reigning champions of number of appearances.
So thanks very much, and we'll hope to get you back on soon.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thank you.
Happy to turn up anytime you don't have a guest. appropriate guests. Bottom of the barrel. Let's have Sal come on the podcast.
I feel you're selling yourself a bit short here as your PR agent.
We'd be lucky to have you on.
Yeah.
Oh. I think we're always happy to talk shop about narrative and Kill Team anyway.
There we go. So, next time on Once Upon a Kill Team, we'll be looking at the amazing solo slash cooperative Kill Team system, Acolyte. Jason will be trying a campaign with his interrogator, Flash Baptiste. And we'll be joined by the fabulous Fodzilla, creator of the Acolyte system. This one should be a corker.
If what you heard on this podcast sounds even remotely interesting, subscribe and tell your friends. For every subscription to the podcast, I will name one of my Void Boys troupe after an actor of your choice. Please make it properly orcified, obviously.
If you have a few spare pennies and would like to support the show, you can do so through Ko-fi. There is a link in the show notes. Once Upon a Kill Team will always be free, and any help you give goes towards making the podcast better. We really do appreciate it.
Thank you for joining us on Once Upon a Kill Team. Just remember, it's not whether you won or lost. It's whether your Death World veteran leaps from vantage down onto the accursed cult devotees and spears three at once with his pole arm before shouting, "Shish kebab!" See you next time.